Oh man, a lot of powerful stuff in that right there that we're going to look at today. And I don't know if you've picked up on this week two of the series, but you know, not every wolf has traits that we want to follow. In fact, lone wolf tendencies lead to things like predators, which we saw just discussed there in that clip, as well as in that song. I mean, you know, hungry like a wolf. I mean, that's a wolf who's out, you know, preying on people, specifically women. And so we're going to be taking a look at this today. And, you know, we're going to continue to speak to men today, which, by the way, it's great to have you here today. My name's Kurt. If it's your first time with us, I mean, we're so excited that you have chosen to join us here at Cross Point. And last week, we talked to men. This week, we're talking to men. Next week, we're talking directly to men. And then the week after that, we're going to be talking to women. And then we're going to have a couple weeks that are unisex at the end of this series, where it basically just stuff that applies to everyone. And so I'm really excited about where we're going over these next few weeks, because there's some big gaps in our culture when it comes to what it means to be a man. So let's pray real quick before we get going after this. God, I just want to thank you for today. I thank you for every single person who's come into this dark room today to learn and to grow. And I don't care if they're male, if they're female, if they're a student, if they're a senior citizen, whoever's here, God, I just pray that you'd grow us as a result of our time here today. God, I pray that you would help me to facilitate the work you've already done and began right here in this room in every single life here today. God, help me to be helpful today and help us to walk out of here different. I pray these things according to your name and your identity. Amen. Well, as I said, you know, today we're going to be talking to men primarily. Yet, ladies, everything that I say really has application and implications for you as well. But we have to get around the fire, all right? That's why we have a fire. We have to get around the fire. There's something about being around a campfire where you can just kind of, you know, talk in a vernacular that we don't have to worry about in the rest of our culture. I'm not worried about, you know, appeasing the religious, you know, hoity-toities. You know, I'm here to talk about things that matter to men, things that matter to God, and to try to, you know, get out of some of the vernacular of our PC culture, tiptoeing around things that we shouldn't be tiptoeing around. So we're going to gather around the fire over these next few weeks. And in fact, one guy, Norman Mailer, a manly man, he said this. He said, because there is very little honor left in American life, there is a certain built-in tendency to destroy masculinity in the American man. And absolutely, we see this happening in our country today. In fact, we're gender confused. We don't understand what it means to be a man. We don't understand what it means to be a woman, for that matter. You know, we're actually trying to eliminate talk that really delineates the distinct differences of a real man and a real woman. And in the process, we're not creating men of honor. In fact, there's a certain verse and other verses in the Bible that really lose their potency. They lose their pop when we kind of degenderize our country, as we're doing so successfully these days, it seems. In fact, here's one of the things the Apostle Paul said. He said, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. I mean, he says, act like men. Now, in today's, you know, modern translation, you know, we might say something like, well, be a well-rounded individual, or act like an adult, you know, grow up. No, there's something different. Paul says, act like a man. Man, be manly in what you're doing. Act out of love. There's a punch to it. There's a potency to it. You know, it's the same. The same goes for women in Proverbs 31. It says, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Doesn't say a woman who's a well-rounded individual is to be praised. It says, no, a woman who fears the Lord is a woman who's to be praised. So today, as we take a look at some of the things that God calls us to as men, or that God calls the men in your life, ladies, to, you know, we're going to be talking some about some of the stereotypical things men do, but I really don't want it to be about that. I don't even know what all those are. I don't know if it's like, you know, real men drive an F-250 pickup, and, you know, non-manly men drive a minivan with automatic doors that close by themselves. I don't know. You know, because it could be the opposite of that, right? This isn't going to be like real men do these things and real women do that. I'm most concerned today in talking about how males fall into one of two categories. They're either boys or they're men, and there's a lot of delineation between the two. So one of the great kings of the Old Testament we're going to spend the rest of our time looking at today as we talk about this is a guy by the name of King David. He's the second king of Israel. King Saul was the first king. King Saul is a terrible king. In fact, King Saul gets disqualified as the king, and before he gets ushered out of office, the high prophet Samuel is told by God to go to the house of Jesse. God said, basically, he's got a whole bunch of sons. You're going to find the next king of Israel in the house of Jesse. So he goes out to check this guy David out to see who this next king's going to be, and a lot of crazy stuff happens. So before we look at that, let's kind of get an overarching view of who David is and who he is as a man. Take a look at 1 Samuel 16, verse 18. And if you want to follow along in your app, you can hit the Crosspoint app, go to the Bible button, and it'll take you to this verse. It says, "Behold, I have seen the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, a man of good presence, and the Lord is with him." So David has some definite stereotypical tendencies right here. Some of these might even be considered girly tendencies, right? I mean, it says right here, he's skillful in playing. What's David's instrument? Anybody know what his instrument is? What's he play? Yeah, harp, right? How many dudes would be happy sitting around a fire playing a harp? I mean, he's a manly man to be able to do that, right? I mean, he's a Renaissance man. He writes poetry. I mean, his poetry is so good, it makes like the nation of Israel's prayer book, prayer journal, known as the Book of Psalms, and he's actually one of the dominant writers of this. I mean, so he's a man of valor, it says. And then he also has some like really distinct manly tendencies as well. It says he's able to do war and fight like a warrior and do combat in a unique way that honors God. In fact, at one point, he actually goes to King Saul, and he asks if he can have his daughter's hand in marriage. He says, I want to take Michal's hand in marriage. And Saul's like, oh, David, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's a good idea. Thinks about it for a moment. He says, you know, I tell you what. I'm going to kill two birds with one stone right here. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to test you, David, and I'm going to knock out a whole bunch of dudes at the same time because I hear you're a pretty amazing warrior. So he says to him, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out to conquer our arch enemy, the Philistines. They're the group that are anti-God. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to go kill 100 of them and bring me back their foreskins. And here's what David decides to do instead. It says, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. And David brought back their foreskins. How many times do you get to say foreskins? Man, especially in church, right? I tell you what, just turn to a neighbor and say that out loud. Ready on three. One, two, three. Oh, I didn't hear it. Do it again. One, two, three. Oh, yeah. Manly. It's in the Bible. That's what we talk about things in the Bible at Crosspoint. That's what we do here. Now, I don't know which is weirder, that he has to go out and kill a couple hundred people or the aftermath of taking off 200 foreskins and figuring out how to bag them up and get them back to his soon-to-be father-in-law. I don't know. It's weird. This strange stuff happens. This is in the Bible right here. So over the years, I've been trying to figure out, you know, what are some of those distinct characteristics? What are those things that delineate the difference between a boy growing up to being a man? And I tell you what, I've looked at taken some of my best learnings from guys that I look up to, that I've learned from myself. I have, you know, been in student ministry for 15 years in my previous career, and I saw 14-year-old boys who were actually men, and I thought, man, I want to be like that guy right there. And I've had my fair share moments of being around 48-year-old boys that are boys to the core, even though they're almost 50 years in. And now I have a son. And with my son, my 12-year-old son, I've been building these things into him. We talk about these because I want to start early with him. So I want to give you five characteristics today of what it means to be a man and five boyish tendencies that often correspond with these. So number one, a man has a vision for his life. A boy lives one day at a time. See, a man looks out and doesn't just see what's right here. Right, he's not just like, okay, what do I need to do right now today? But there's an ordering process that he understands that if I want to do what I currently can't do, I've got to do certain disciplines to get to that place and for that to actually be accomplished. See, boys don't have this. Boys don't have a vision for their life. Boys, they don't know why they're going to school. All right? They don't get that there's something that's being developed in them. Boys don't understand discipline. Boys don't understand, you know, that I don't always take the path of least resistance. Boys always want the path of least resistance. But a man says, you know, I want to get X, Y, and Z, and in order to do that, there's certain things I've got to be about today so I can maybe accomplish those things tomorrow. See, a man has a vision for his life. David has an unmistakable moment where he gets God's vision for his life. See, Samuel, the high prophet, goes out to the house of Jesse, and he begins looking over Jesse's sons. He's got a whole bunch of them, and then the first son he sees is this big strapping dude. He's like, oh, man, this kid right here is going to be the next king of Israel. This is the one God brought me out here to see. And God tells Samuel in his heart, he said, Samuel, this is not the one. This is not the one. You're looking at the external. I need you to look at the heart. I want you to look at the internal. He's like, all right, he looks at the next son. Oh, man, this son must be the one. Nope, not him. He goes on down the line, all the way down the line of sons. He gets to the very end, and over none of them did God say, yeah, this is the next king. Samuel's a little confused. He's like, God, I thought you said the next king was going to come from this family. You know, he actually goes to Jesse. He says, Jesse, do you have any more sons? I don't know what to do here. He says, well, I mean, we got this one, you know, the youngest one. I mean, he's out in the field watching the sheep. I mean, he's doing the dirtiest job of all. I mean, he's lowest on the totem pole, so he's out in the field. So Samuel, he goes out to the field, and he checks out this kid out there, this little boy, looks like a boy, and he sees God's fingerprints all over this kid. And God tells his heart, that's the one right there. And he looks and he sees he's not big in stature, but on the inside, this is who God's going to use. In fact, here's what happens as Samuel anoints David. It says, the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. Love that word, rushed upon him, upon David from that day forward. So David gets a vision that he's going to be the king of Israel. Now, I hesitate sharing this with you because this is somewhat unrelatable to us, right? You're probably not, you know, waking up, somebody telling you, oh, you're going to be the king of a nation here. You know, get ready. I mean, we don't get that fully. And you probably don't have anybody coming and like putting oil over your head saying, hey, I anoint you. Here's the vision for your life. All right, so most of the time this doesn't happen this way. It doesn't happen for this way for me most of the time. I mean, for me, 98, 99% of the time, the visions that I get are usually thoughts I have. And as I process those thoughts, I'm like, you know, I think this is something God would really want to see happen. In fact, I'm gonna get after that. I'm gonna put my life against that thing so we can hopefully make that thing happen. And I trust that that's from God. See, this is something, a man has to have something they're going after, whether this week, this month, this year, or this decade, because a boy never will. A boy will never have that. I came home this past week and on my desk where my computer sits, this note was there from my son. And to you, it looks like probably kitchen scratch, you know, like chicken scratchings. But I was like, oh my word, this is my son becoming a man right here. You know, my gone are the days where my kids always get like Jeffrey's toy catalog. You know, I'm talking about from like Toys R Us, and they just circle things and then they hand it to you. Oh, we want all these things. And my son, he's been working on some YouTube stuff, and he's like, I want a video camera. He also wants some new shoes that we've told him we're not purchasing. And so we said, hey, you're going to have to get a plan. You want something, get a plan and figure it out. He mapped out, you know, what he wants, how much it costs, how much he wants to ask us to chip in, how much he needs, and how much he's in the hole. And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. This is you getting a vision for something you want, getting a plan, working it, and knowing that I can't just have it right now, but I got to work to get to it. I don't know what it is for you. I don't know if it's saying, I'm going to say I do, and I'm going to stay into that I do relationship for the next 60 plus years till death do us part, or if it's saying, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be the first person in my family to get and hold down a job and not live off the government for the rest of my life, or if it's saying, I'm going to, you know, start a business and employ a bunch of people. I don't know what it is for you. All I know is every man knows what it is, and that enables him to say no to certain things and yes to other things. See, because when you have a vision, you can delay gratification. See, when you have a vision, it allows you to say, you know, I could do that, but I'm not going to because of a vision for my life. Or maybe there's certain things other people are doing that you don't do because you have a vision for where your life's going. Or maybe there's certain things other people don't want you to do because they're like, man, you're going to show me up. And you're like, I'm going to do this because God has given me a vision and I'm going after it and I need to pursue this thing. See, boys cannot delay gratification. Boys see the empty candy bowl, and they're just like, oh, I want it all, take it all. No awareness of everybody else around them. And ladies, let me speak to you for just a moment, all right? If you're in the room and you're dating someone, ladies, if you're dating a gentleman or a man or a boy, and you do not see this character trait of delayed gratification in his life, let me just give you a little advice. Head for the hills! Head for the hill. Get out of there. All right, leave right now. If he doesn't have delayed gratification in his life, you need to head for the hills. All right, in the relationship. Listen, lab puppies are a lot of fun to be around, but they poop all over your life, all right? That's what's going to happen. All right, you need to head for the hills because boys can't delay gratification. But a man has a vision for his life, and he's constantly focusing on it. Number two. Second thing, a man works and a boy plays. See, a boy gets up and all he wants to do is have fun. A boy, all he wants to do is have a good old time. I mean, the only purpose you go to school for is to get to recess, you know. I get up on Saturday, I don't want to work. I don't want to contribute to the family or the wolf pack or the team. I just want to do what I want to do all the time. But see, a man works. A man works. He realizes this is how I bring value. In fact, something really interesting when it comes to wolf packs. I don't know if you realize this or not, but wolf packs work together. I mean, when you're part of a wolf pack, you're not a lone wolf. You're not off doing your gig. No, you actually work with the wolf pack. And if you don't work with the wolf pack, guess what? They kill you. You're just out. They don't, like, kick you out. They kill you, so you're out. I saw a really fascinating article recently about Richard Sherman, the star quarterback for Seattle Seahawks, about how he had a real dad growing up. Take a look at this. It says his dad still gets up at 3:45 a.m. every single morning to do trash in Los Angeles. How about that? And his friends, some of his friends have said, hey, why do you do that, man? You don't need to do trash anymore. You got a son who's making tens of millions of dollars. You can totally ride on him. He said, no, I need to work. You know why I need to work? Because men work. That's why I need to work. I don't want to just be sitting around. Men want to work. See, boys fantasize about early retirement all the time. Like, oh, wouldn't that be so cool? Man, I just retire, don't have to do anything, I can do whatever I want with my life, I can play all day. I hear that, I'm like, man, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Now, I don't know how long I'm going to be in my role here at Cross Point. It's indefinite right now. Some of you are like, crap, I thought he was going to be out of here soon. But, I mean, unless they fire me or something, but I don't want to be in my role one day past the point where I'm effective. I mean, not one day. As long as I'm effective, man, I'm in. But I tell you what, whenever I'm done, or whatever I go on, I'm going to work. Even when I retire, I'm going to work. I mean, listen. And man, we get this, right? I mean, we understand that, you know, there comes a day where, you know, our bodies start slowing down. Our mind doesn't maybe think as quick as we used to. Or corporate America may kick us out. We may have to, you know, get something else. Or, you know, we may not always even be in an earning posture. But this concept of, like, not bringing value, not doing work and only doing what I want to do all day long, seriously. I mean, that's like selfish boy behavior right there. I mean, it really is. I mean, that never advances anything. I mean, the kingdom never grows when that happens. I mean, I want no part of that. Why? Because men work. I mean, one of the things I love here at Cross Point is how many men we have involved here. Let's hear for the men that serve around here. Let's just give it up for the guys. You know, they serve in here and kids and greeting inside. You know why that's so big? Because real men work, man. I love the fact that guys come in here and they're like, man, I'll get to work. You know, I'm not just gonna ride on the coattails and sit my butt, just about slipped. I'm trying to keep it clean today. Sit my butt in the seat every weekend. I'm gonna go to work. I'm gonna sign up to volunteer. I'm gonna build into others because that's what men do. See, David. This perhaps is why he was chosen. Because we get this glimpse into his life, one of these public outings, where he's on the front lines with the nation of Israel, and there's this beast of a man with the Philistines named Goliath. And I don't really have time to get into the whole story, but Goliath comes out, this big, big man, and he says to the Israelites, give me your best, come on down into the valley, and let's settle this thing once and for all. And all the Israelite army, they're a bunch of boys. They all look around. They're like, oh, man, who's going to go? You're going to go fight? No, you're going to go. I don't want to go. They're like all trying to figure it out. And in the meantime, David, who's not even in the army, he's like 12 at the time or 14, he comes and brings lunch to his brothers who are out on the front line. And he just shows up and he's like, hey, guys, what's going on? What are you doing? And they're like, oh, gee, that Philistine, you know, Goliath's out there. He's taunting us. He's making us feel like we need to come out and fight him. And you know, and David's like, you kidding me? I'll go fight him. And I'll work today. And Saul, who's still the king at the time, he kind of laughs. He's like, David, you're way in over your head right now. You can't do this. Take a look at what David says. He says, your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when they came, lions and tigers and bears. Oh, geez, come on. Lions and tigers and bears. Yeah, when there came a lion or a bear, that's just always fun, they took a lamb from the flock. I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defiled the armies of the living God. David's like, man, I'll go to work. I'll go to work. Man, I've been working in the field since I was little. Man, I didn't have a gun in my hand. I had a slingshot in my hand. I've been slaying beasts for years. Man, I'll go down there. And you know what he does? He does that. He goes down the valley and he wins. He's not afraid of it. He's not like, oh man, we're so stressed. What are we going to do? We're men, but we don't know what to do. No, he goes down and he fights. Saw a great quote from a book recently, a book by the name of Manthropology, all right? Just take a look at this and let it cement in your mind for a moment, because if you want to Google this book, make sure you Google Manthropology, all right? I was looking for this week, and I typed in Manthology, and I thought, well, that's not it, and I don't want you to, like, order Manthology and have that show up in your, you know, like, in your mailbox. You'd be really, maybe you want Manthology, I don't know, but Manthropology is this great, great picture of just men being men and the capacity that men have to carry loads. In fact, one little section talks about Nero and his armies and how, you know, Nero, when he was training his armies, they would run 2 marathons a day for a week carrying 100 pounds of weight each because the male body can do that. And yet we're sitting around going, oh gosh, I have 40 hours in my cube. Oh my word, I got to go sit in my cube all day. I'm so stressed. And they pay me for it. You know, I mean, we're like, it's like, buck up, come on, like work. Even Jesus says, my Father, he's always been working up to present time. And I too am working. I mean, Jesus, like Dad and I, man, we're working. You know why? Because men like to work. Third thing, a man is a team player. A boy wants to be an MVP. And let me tell you something, by the way. If you're a woman sitting in here right now, especially if you're somebody who's dating, or if you're a student and you're dating, these are the things you should be looking for in who you date. Just as a heads up. All right, this is what you're looking for right here. A man is a team player. A boy wants to be an MVP. See, boys have to have everything revolving around them all the time. You know, boys always want to be the all-time quarterback. You know, boys, you know, they if things don't go their way, they take their ball and they go home. They're like, I'm not playing if you don't play my way. I mean, you know, men, even though you may have the best arm on the team and you should be the quarterback, men go, hey, if you need me to play line today, even though I've got the best arm, man, I'm in for the line because I'm a team player. I'm playing wherever the team needs me because that's what men do. See, Jesus operated in the context of the team. God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit is a team. I mean, Jesus developed a team. It was called the disciples. He had a group of 12, which is his intimate team that he was taking out to change the world. In fact, at the heart, see, wolves, lone wolves don't operate in team. Lone wolves are losers. Lone wolves are predators. Lone wolves take advantage of people. Wolves that operate in packs are healthy. Wolves that operate in teams understand, hey, I have honor for the team. One of David's worst moments in his life was when he forgot this. And we saw a few minutes ago, David was a man of valor. He was a man of honor. He was best when he was out conquering lands and taking new territory. But one day he wakes up and he decides to act like a boy. And listen, you know, all of us, myself included, man, I've got some boyish tendencies. I'm still growing in this. All right, but David has a massive relapse right here. In fact, here's what it says in 2 Samuel, chapter 11. In the spring, at the time when the kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. So in the springtime, this is the time when the kings go out to war. This is really important to understand. You need to understand what's happening right here. Over the winter months, the marauders and the neighboring nations, they would begin to encroach on the boundaries of David's kingdom. And in the winter months, they couldn't get out there. Their chariots wouldn't go through the soft ground. So when the spring came and the ground hardened up, when they could get their chariots to roll out, they would go out to the perimeters of their country and they would fight off the marauders trying to encroach on their boundaries. And especially guys like David, who were very warlike and have the core competency of being a warrior, he would go out and this was what his life was about. This was his mission. He was a fighter. He was to fend off and protect his people. And instead, one day, David goes, hey, Joab, I think I'm going to sit this one out. Why don't you go out and fight for him? I'm going to stay back in my palace. And as a result, he's not on mission. As a result, he's not working his mission. And I tell you what, when you take a man off his mission, when you take a man off of his core thing, his core competencies, and you allow him to be himself, you allow him to have idle time, bad things happen. All right, see, men are kind of like a pickup truck, all right? I mean, you know, men operate best with a load. They really do. I mean, you know, if you don't have a load in the back of that truck, we're bouncing all over the place, right? But man, when we are loaded down, we just roll real smooth, right? And ladies, some of you are like, I've never driven a truck. Well, just trust me on this, all right? Men do best when we have a load. And so David, everybody's out to war. He's just looking around. He doesn't have anything to do. He's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? He's like, oh, I like her. Check her out. I think I'll do her. Which I don't know who's sitting out here, by the way. I can't see you. I'm probably looking at a dude out here, all right? I'm just looking into the darkness, just so you know. But he looks out, he doesn't have anything to do, and he has an adulterous affair with Bathsheba. And this is a massive, massive thing right here. And she gets pregnant, and he goes, oh my word, what am I gonna do? She's gonna begin to show. Her husband's out at war, so she's like, oh, I got an idea, I'll bring her husband home. So he brings Uriah home off the front lines, and he's thinking, man, if I can get him to come home, then when she begins to show, you know, people are going to think, oh, well, Uriah's been home. They just had a child together. So here's the thing. Uriah, her husband, is a part of David's wolf pack. He's a part of David's inner circle, a part of his mighty men. And he brings him home from the front lines, and Uriah's like, man, there's no way I'm sleeping with my wife on a soft bed when my wolf pack's out fighting in the mud. He's like, there's no way, man. I'm a man of honor. I'm a man of integrity. So you know what Uriah does? He goes and he sleeps at the front gates of the city to sleep on a hard ground because he's like, man, I'm one with my wolf pack out there. Even though I'm here, I'm gonna sleep out here because they're out fighting their butts off. And David is livid. He's livid because his plan is not working to cover up his boyish behaviors. And so this is like the start of a downward spiral in David's life right here. And David sends Uriah back to the front line. As soon as he gets there, he says to Joab, he says, Joab, as soon as Uriah's on the front line, I want you to call the army to retreat so that he's out there alone and he gets killed. And that's exactly what happens. David kills one of his wolf pack trying to cover up his boyish behaviors. I mean, he was off his game right here. See, men need to be pushed. Man, we need a load. We need to be challenged. We need to realize we're part of a team. This is part of why, man, I'm so excited about Man Camp coming up. I mean, I'm so excited about this because some of us have never done anything like this where we've gone out. It's one night, as Eric said. I mean, it's less than 24 hours. But this is a place where, you know, men 18 years and older, or men in training 18 years and older, who, you know, are still learning to be a boy, you can go and you can get stretched. I mean, you can sign up in the app right now. I mean, you just sign up if you're not a part of this yet. I mean, and I've talked to a few guys, like, well, I've never camped. I'm like, awesome, you're going to have to depend on some of the other guys. They're going to help you figure it out. I've never, like, gone, you know, without running water for a day. Awesome, you're going to figure it out. Never, like, taking a dump in the woods. Cool, we'll show you how, all right? Don't worry, all right? You're going to enjoy it. You really will. And I tell you what, you're going to physically and spiritually grow as you lean into community and into your wolf pack during this experience. I guarantee it. See, we don't have much of this in our culture today. You realize by the time a boy reaches the age of 21, he's spent over 10,000 hours playing video games. You know what that means? That means he's spent 10,000 hours alone in a dark room by himself. The average male under the age of 18 watches 50 porn clips a week. You know what this means? This means that he's training himself to believe that sex is a solo act. He's training himself to think that, man, when I get married, this is how my wife is going to be. And listen, I'm very anti-porn. I'm not really anti-video games. All I'm saying is we have all of these things in our culture that isolate us. And we've got to do things that cause us to lean into each other. Number four, a man is a protector. A boy is a predator. A boy preys on women and their sexual stuff trying to bag them. This is what David does with Bathsheba. He preys on her. He's a predator in this moment. I mean, when David's on his game, when he's on his mission, when he's, you know, he's awesome. He's a protector. But in this moment, he's a predator on someone else's wife. And I tell you what, we have this happening all over our culture today. We see boys preying on women all over the place. In fact, it's well documented. You know, 1 out of 5 women today on our college campuses will be raped during their time on campus. And listen, women, I know one of the reasons that some of you have not been looking forward to this series, or you hear we're doing something on men, and you're just like, man, I'm not pro-man. And you have to ask yourself, why am I not pro-man? You know, and I don't know your reason, you probably have a reason, but I would venture to say that many of us that feel that way, it's because at some point, there was a boy who hurt you. And on behalf of all men, let me just say, man, I am sorry. I am sorry that that boy hurt you. I mean, just understand, that boy doesn't represent all of us. All right, and my prayer is that there's a healing and there's just a rain of God's grace and mercy that comes into your life and brings a healing to you, because a predator took advantage of you when you thought you could trust him, and you should have been able to, but you thought you could trust him and he was just a boy. And guys, let me just speak straight with you for just a second. All right, if you're a guy and you're with somebody here, you're dating somebody in the room, let me just tell you what, stop. You need to stop right now. You stop having sex with her. Just stop it. And let me tell you why. I'm not even gonna give you the Bible reasons. All right, there's a whole bunch of those, because you need to protect her. You need to protect her. Every time you have sex with her, it creates a memory and an adhesion that just rips apart and creates open wounds. When you're not with her, you're likely not gonna marry her. You're likely going to marry somebody else. She's going to marry somebody else. You need to protect her so she has as little adhesion to you as possible when she gets in her marriage. And you want that for your wife too. You want your wife coming in with as little baggage as possible. And even if you do marry the person you're with, listen, you know, when you delay gratification and you say, you know what, I'm not having sex until we're married, till it's in that context, you're preparing for a great marriage. See, when you're off on business someday and you're traveling during the week and she's at home and she's wondering, man, I wonder if he's screwing around when he's, you know, staying at a hotel all week long. You're not going to have to worry about that with her. She's going to have full confidence in you, because she's going to know, when I was dating him, he delayed gratification. And so why would he not do that with me right now? You need to protect her. See, boys don't understand this at all. Boys are like, oh, we're two consenting adults. Why can't I not put my hand in the candy jar? See, boys, they think if it's something that feels good, what do you mean I would not do that? It's like an utterly foreign thought to guys, to boys. See, men, they prepare for the future. They have a vision for the future. Number five, men take a minority position. Boys always have to be in the majority. Now, I realize that much of what I've just said this morning for many of us is quite unpopular. I'm just going to be honest. You know, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I realize that some of what I shared with you today, you maybe even haven't heard before, but that's because I'm taking a minority position. You're not going to hear this much in our culture today. In fact, Norman Mailer, he said this. He said, masculinity is not something that's given to you, but it's something you gain. You gain it by winning small battles with honor. See, masculinity is noticing when a habit is becoming very close to an addiction, and I say, you know what, I'm going to take a minority position right now. It's noticing that, hey, I could have a beer. I mean, I could have a beer around the fire. There's nothing wrong with having a beer. But you know what, if I'm getting to the place where that alcohol is becoming a habit and maybe even an addiction, then I need to take a minority position. Even though I could have one, I'm going to opt out and be in the minority, because that's what men do. Or it might be that, you know, you're starting to see your spending is getting out of control and you're losing traction financially. And you might be thinking, well, man, the guys in my office who work and have similar pay to me, they have all kinds of toys they're going after. And maybe you say, I'm going to take a minority position. I mean, I could do those things, but I'm going to be in the minority because I need to help my family. I need to protect my family and get our spending back on track. Take a minority position. See, men, you know, men, boys, when you know, boys in the room, they go, you know, hey, you going to man camp? Oh, you know, are you going to man camp? You going to man camp? Who's going to man camp? See, boys, get this. Boys can never go to a sleepover without finding out who's going, right? Boys are like, oh, who's going? I gotta find out who's going. Men, they just sign up for man camp. The men on the list are manly men. They're like, man, I'm going. I don't know who's going. I'm just going. You need to sign up for this thing, all right? Stand up. Be in the minority. You know, boys, when they see somebody being picked on or taken advantage of, they join in. They go with the majority, but men, they stand in and defend. They stand in and defend. They don't always have to be going with where culture is going. See, men get used to it. They get used to being in the minority. Listen, I'm very comfortable on being weird when it comes to sexual mores. I really am. I'm very comfortable knowing you're not going to like everything I say. And I'm cool with that. I mean, it's not that I don't like that you don't like what I say. It's just that I don't expect it. I don't expect it at all. But I'm okay with it. Why am I okay with it? Because otherwise, we have a bunch of freaking boys around here. I don't want to raise boys. I want us to raise men and women who fear God. Because when we do that, God is pleased. And we go to new places when we're in packs, calling each other to a higher standard. And ladies, in case you haven't noticed this, all these five things like totally apply to your life, right? It's just that if I don't speak them to the guys are like, whoosh, you know, they're like, oh, that wasn't for me, you know? So that's why I'm talking to men, right? Because some of us aren't living the adventuresome life God calls us to, right? And there's a whole new place to go. So let's take out our connection cards. I want us to process what this means for us before we get out of here. On the back of your connection card are some next steps. And I've just listed out the five traits, core traits we've talked about today. And this is for men, women, students, boys, girls. I want you to look over these five. And I just want you to ask yourself, where's the outage in my life? Where do I maybe need to grow the most? Is it in having a vision for the future? Or, you know, do I just need to work? Do I need to really put my head to the, you know, nose to the grindstone and work? Or what is it? I mean, what's that conviction God's been stirring in me that I need to get some traction on? And then I want you to mark it, right? And you're not marking it for us. We're not going to do anything with this. This is for you to declare it and say, hey, God, I want to grow in this week. I want you to begin to grow me even right now in this, because I want to get to a new place for my family. I want to get to a new place for the person I'm dating. I want to get to a new place for my spouse. I want to get to a new place for my kids. God, I want to get to a new place so I can honor you with my life. So pick one of those and just say, God, this is it, man. This is where I want to grow this week. And as you're doing that, I just want to ask every man that's hearing my voice right now to go ahead and stand. Just stand to your feet. I want to pray a prayer, a blessing for you. And if you're a man in the room, wherever you are, or a boy who's wanting to become a man, go ahead and stand up right now. And it may be awkward. You might be thinking, oh, gosh, not everybody's standing. Well, this is the minority. I mean, it's a minority position when you stand and everybody else isn't necessarily doing it. But I just want to pray for us. God, I thank you right now for these men, these boys in training, boys who are wanting to be men, and those who are manly men that are standing right now. I pray that your grace would be on them. God, we've all, myself included, had boyish moments. We've had moments where we've fallen short, and God, I just pray that there would be a forgiveness that would wash over these men that are standing right now. God, I pray that they would be able to walk away from shame, that they would be able to endure the conviction that you've placed in them right now, whatever that thing is that they're feeling. I want to grow here. This is an outage. I want to grow in this area. God, I pray that you would nurture them. You'd grow them. God, I pray these men would be empowered to be godly warriors, to be godly men that serve our community, that protect our families, that stand in, go against the grain when that's needed to be done. God, I pray that you give them a grace, give them an understanding, give them the right people in their life to do life with. God, I just pray that you would do something in them. And in this series, God, that they've been longing for, and maybe they didn't even know it. And God, I just pray these things according to your power and your character and your identity. Amen. Amen. All right, let's the rest of us go ahead and stand. And we're going to sing a song that just talks about getting after it and climbing the hill and getting to that place where God wants us to be. So let's do this together.